All right, y'all, welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I am the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and I've recorded more than 5,000 interviews going back to 2003, all of which are available at scotthorton.org. You can also sign up for the podcast feed. The full archive is also available at youtube.com/Scott Horton Show. All right, you guys, introducing Ryan Dawson from Anti-Neocons, the Anti-Neocons Report. Welcome back to the show. How you doing? Been a while.
I'm all right. Long time. I'm going through Rona right now and a lot of censorship, but the good news, we've had some good news this week, too, with Ghislaine Maxwell going to prison and withdrawing some troops from Germany and other things, trying to keep the ups and downs together.
Yeah, well, that's good. I hadn't seen that they actually removed the troops from Germany yet, so that's a nice note. But yeah, so I got this note from you that said that you'd been kicked off of Patreon this time, and I know that for as long as I've known you, which is about 15 years or something, that you're always getting deplatformed from something or another, usually YouTube, I guess, but you always find a way to, get reinstated somehow or another. And usually, I think you're up against the Zionists accusing you of anti-Semitism is really the root of it. But this time, do I get this it right time, that you've crossed the social justice leftists on the recent debates about race and the riots and everything?
That's what I thought it was. And you're right. Like, most of the time, I get canned, and then I do my appeals. And if I can get hold of a human being to actually look at my content, they go, oh, you're not breaking any rules, and they reinstate me. But I am. It does remove me for months, and I lose lots of revenue. But this year, I lost PayPal in November. They wouldn't even give me a reason. And then with Patreon, the initial reason they gave me was the SJW woke cult coming after me. But now they've given me three different reasons, because a lot of I'm a Patreon refugee, so my Patreons are writing them because they actually charged everybody for July, even though we only had 2 days of July's content. So I told them, don't let them take your money. And so I've got three different reasons that they've given, and people have screenshot this and given them to me. One was accusing me of using racial slurs about the black community, which I never did. Another was religious bigotry, which I don't even talk about religion. And another one was pornography with child porn and bestiality, which I've also never done. So they can't even make up a good reason. The real reason is probably the same reason as always, all the anti-Zionism. But it may also be the woke cult, because I have been writing about that as well. And that is a very taboo topic. But I've always taken the position. I mean, I interviewed Will Grigg and others too, and Larkin Rose, have been talking about police abuse longer than Black Lives Matter has existed. But I think by targeting some of the liberal sacred cows, which does not make me a conservative, by the way, but by going after some of the policies that I think are detrimental to minorities, that's an unallowable answer. Racism is the only answer allowable. So you can't look at any policies that are detrimental to minority groups. And that's gotten me in trouble.
Well, we're certainly at the height of crazy of the cancel culture now, where a trucker was cracking his knuckles and it looked like he was doing the AOK symbol, which according to a 4chan joke is a white supremacist symbol. And so some leftist took a picture of the guy cracking his knuckles and tattletaled on him to his boss, and the guy got fired, and he's a Mexican.
Yeah, he was Hispanic too.
So obviously the things are at the height
of video games.
Yeah, I'm sorry, what?
That, like, I think Call of Duty, or that might be the wrong game, but they do the okay hand signals, like soldiers, like okay and whatever. They're removing the hand gesture from video games.
And that started out as a joke. That was the I don't even know if they're actual racists at 4chan, just saying, wouldn't it be funny if we could make people think that saying A-okay is a racist thing, and then it worked.
I actually know the guy that got they wrote an article, this is in the Northwest of course, saying peanut butter and jelly is racist, like the sandwich.
Sweet.
And he did it as a, just to see if they would bite, and they did. So now, and you can look up just Google or DuckDuckGo peanut butter jelly racist, and they totally fell for that and jumped all over it. So
awesome.
It's like a mental disorder at that point where I'm like, there's nothing racist about saying okay, and there's nothing racist about peanut butter and jelly. Okay is actually the most pervasive word across cultures. It's in almost every language.
Yeah,
it comes from nautical symbols. It was a person's initials at the harbor in New York. Huh. So it used to be O.K. And they started using, because the Italians and the British and the French and everybody were trading, and they would use that symbol and then a stamp later. And now it's in Japanese. They say okay. Korean, they say okay.
That's interesting.
Yep. Pretty neat.
So there you go. You even got the etymology of okay nailed down.
So now it's racist.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that the deplatforming stuff is, you know, sure to blow over. They're not going to be able to sustain this for very long without creating such a backlash against it. But it sure sounds like you're caught up in the middle of it. But now, wait a minute. If people are accusing you of child porn and bestiality and stuff, they're accusing you of that to Patreon. And then Patreon's just taking their word for that? Or
well, no, Patreon wrote that in an email to one of my subscribers. And then later they say, oh, I hit the wrong button. So they just have like ready-made lists, like this, this, or this.
Oh,
right?
So they copied and pasted a standard answer against you.
Yeah.
And then later when confronted about it, they said, oh, we pasted the wrong answer in there.
Exactly.
Okay.
They said, well,
which is actually sort of understandable, although it's also a likely excuse, but I understand.
It's an excuse because they gave three different, I've never done any of these things anyway. And they said, well, if you link to Patreon from other social media platforms, and I'm like, well, I'm banned on those too. So I know that's not it because I haven't done any tweets because I got kicked off that a long time ago.
Well, so are you still pursuing this with them and saying, well, actually, listen, the reasons that you're giving aren't good enough. So let's keep fighting about it.
I am. I'm saying, well, where's the example of either religious bigotry or racial slurs or pornography? Because I've never done any of those things. Like, I'm the guy arguing against the racist. You know, I've gone into the pit with them and argued with them. And you're not allowed to do that either, apparently. Like, you just... And I'm on their show. They're not on mine. So I'm not giving them a voice or anything. Like, I argue with these... I'm not even going to name who they are, but I've gone and fight with these people and changed a lot of their minds, actually.
Well, you think that might be part of it, that just your name is Googleable with theirs in a pretty, recognizable
way? I've been hit
way.
With everything from racism to Holocaust denial to all that. And it is because I did argue with revisionists and I did argue with racists and stuff. But I don't think so. I think it's just everyone's getting erased in 2020. Like, and I was just on that list because there was probably, if you combine viewership, you know, at least 10 million kicked off YouTube just in the last week. And it ranged from Stefan Molyneux to Max Egan, who's like a pro-Palestine guy. Molyneux, I don't really like him, but, you know, if you don't like it, change the channel. You know, there's no reason to censor, but they just started kicking everybody off everything. And I think it's like what Project Veritas exposed. They don't want another 2016 to happen. So I think in their minds,
they're
going to
cause one with this kind of stuff. I mean,
well, exactly. Right. They're all this Antifa, BLM, too, which it's a Marxist organization. Like, I'm all for fighting police abuse and I'm all for minority rights, but it's not been that for a long time. And it's an overloaded term. That's what they'd use in mathematics. They'd say, well, what are you against black lives? Or if for Antifa, what are you pro-fascism then? Because we're anti-fascist. That's what our title says. Like, well, no, because I don't think that your behavior matches your title. You know? You can't loot Target. That doesn't help you fight police abuse. You know, it's really simple. But I think the far left is destroying any chance of defeating Trump. I think there's a huge silent majority, and there's a lot of people that don't really like Trump, but will vote for him anyway because the other side is so scary and browbeating, calling everybody a Nazi, and you know that's very off-putting to anybody that's not an absolute moron can see through that, and nobody likes being accused of having original sin, some of the policies in Seattle and Portland that they're doing to white people right now is just atrocious. I mean, that's racist, the things they're coming out with, and it's got to have a backlash. They're not only causing racism.
At the same time, though, I mean, if you're running things at Patreon, then you know that you're going to have, they have an entire department for dealing with tattletales, right? I mean, they have to. Because every day somebody's trying to get somebody else kicked off of there. And so they can't just give in to everybody. They have to have some standards about how they do this, right? In other words, somebody's in charge, not just a computer.
Well, it's almost a computer because it's NPCs. Like it's almost like a sport to cancel people. Like I got one. I think they get rewarded for it or something. Uh-huh. And I have a dedicated group on Twitter, this guy, Gabe Hoffman. He's a hedge fund manager in Florida. And when I was digging into the Jeffrey Epstein ring, I uncovered a lot. I have been chasing Jeffrey Epstein for 13 years. I don't know. You may have remember when I had a forum and I was Rye. I think that's how we met. And I was talking about it back then. That stuff's still up there. And no one listened to me. But we had people coming forward. And it was because I had already gone over the Franklin Clarendon scandal and the Finders cult and then the D.C. Madame and so on. So we had a reputation for fighting child trafficking. And people approached us. And that shows you how they had nowhere to go if they're coming to our forum, right? Like, why don't you tell the police? We did. It doesn't matter. They bribe them, blah, blah, blah. So I've been into that for a long time. And I uncovered this cell in Florida. And so I have some very powerful people. And they wrote on Twitter, like, after they got me kicked off PayPal, they're like, his Patreon is next. Like, they didn't even care. I'm like, what are you, pro child trafficking or something? Like, why are you after me for being against Jeffrey Epstein? But they are. So, and it's because there's a lot of prominent people that were involved in that ring. That was a lot worse than just international sex trafficking. They had a organized blackmail ring backed by MEGA.
Well, there's a new book called Epstein, Dead Men Tell No Tales, by a former Israeli spy named Ari Ben Menashe, who says this whole thing was a Mossad op all along.
Yeah, it was. It's not just Mossad. It's the Mossad has a group in Canada and the U.S. referred to in the Jonathan Pollard case as MEGA. And I remember Justin Raimondo writing about it as well, talking about the intercepted Israeli
Bamford's written about
cables.
MEGA too.
Bamford has written about MEGA. MEGA isn't a guy. It's a group. It's called the MEGA Donors is what it's short for. And it's like Michael Steinhardt and the Bronfman family, which was caught in the Nexium cult, and Les Wexner. And Wexner, of course, is the one that's got the spotlight on him because he bought Epstein a house. And he's the sort of the cutout front that they used to make him a supposed hedge fund manager, which he wasn't. All comes from Wexner's money. But this group of Zionist billionaires is the second generation of the Sonnenborn group that Grant Smith and others have written about who actually helped Israel acquire nuclear weapons. Right? They made a group in 1945 for Haganah and Palmach that were started in gun running and weapons procurement, but it morphed into worse because the more they got away with, the more emboldened they got. And because they were using like Holocaust charities, nobody wanted to touch it because it's such a politically sensitive thing, especially in the 40s. Who wants to get, you know, be wrong about something like that? So they had no shame in laundering money to help terrorists, essentially. And the second generation of that, that's what MEGA is. And they propped up Jeffrey Epstein, and I imagine more, but that's just the one we caught, you know. And now they got Ghislaine Maxwell in a paper dress to try to make sure she doesn't kill herself.
Because that's the danger.
Yeah, right.
Listen.
Oh, well, they're going to COVID her anyway, so.
You know, it gives me a whole new appreciation for William Jefferson Clinton here, where he just decided, you know what? Screw it. Go ahead and film me. I don't care. Let's go. Take me to the island. And he knows exactly what's going on here.
Already.
Huh?
They had him when he was governor in Arkansas, actually. So I think because he was so compromised is why he was pushed to become president. But that's my conspiracy. But
what makes you say that Mossad had him back then? Is that you mean by they? The Israelis had him in Arkansas?
They had him back then in Arkansas when Hillary and Bill were part of Iran-Contra, which was a jointly conducted covert intelligence act between both U.S. and Israel.
Yeah.
Right. The Israelis started selling contraband airplane parts and stuff to Iran. And a good book on that is Robert Perry's October Surprise gets all into that portion of it. And then you have a couple different things going on in the United States where they needed to train pilots, which is the whole MENA saga. And they also are running guns in one direction and drugs in the other because Ali North and them couldn't find enough ways to launder money. There was no explainability for where, how do they buy all this? And it was like, oh, it's the narcotics trade. Same crap that's going on in Syria. And so the Clintons were involved in both the pilot training and the drug running. And Barry Seal, and who was a mentor of David Ferry and all, these guys were very much into women, and so were both of the Clintons. So they had them honey trapped a long time ago.
Well, what's funny is that was
another one in Louisiana.
That was a crazy conspiracy theory as hell until they made a Tom Cruise movie about it, and now everybody knows that. Yeah, huh?
Everyone kind of knows that because the Tom Cruise movie told a lot more than I thought it was going to.
Yeah.
I think I saw you in D.C. I hadn't seen it yet. It was on the plane, but my audio was so bad I didn't mess with it. But I watched it on the way back. And when that scene where he's like on the phone with Governor Clinton and they like let him go.
Yep.
I can't believe
you know,
they
included
that.
Terry Reed and his wife at some militia gun rally type thing in Denver back in, 98, I guess.
Yeah, his book Compromise, I think it's page 63, where he talks about the meeting with Ali North, and they're writing stuff on the napkins and Barry, and it's just all like they're eating oysters somewhere. And it shows like, wow, they really weren't good at this, like how to launder money at all. And narcotics became their go-to thing. And that's part of the reason for occupying Afghanistan for so long is the heroin trade facilitates sort of a black market revenue for all these sponsorships around the world, whether it's Al-Shabaab or Ahrar al-Sham, et cetera, from Syria to Somalia. That's how they're financing them in great part is through the narcotics trade. So if you could end the war in Afghanistan, it would actually really reduce the explainability of revenue for ISIS and other groups. You ought to end it anyway because it's immoral and pointless, but I know you've written a really great book, the definitive book on Afghanistan. I hope everybody gets that, but that is another wing of the narcotics trafficking. People have to realize how that relates to terrorism because without it, they can't explain how they're buying tow missiles and all these wonderful toys, as the Joker would say, because they don't have manufacturing. They don't have ISIS factories building missiles, you know, or how they buy all these Toyota trucks.
Well, they got oil sheiks in Saudi and UAE, especially too. You can just reassign a bank account full of $1 billion and just hand it over to al-Nusra. That's pretty easy.
Yeah, when they can. I mean, that's kind of UAE's honey jarring is how they partly financed some of the 9/11 hijackers. But
yeah, no, there's no question that every faction with any power and influence in Afghanistan is making money in heroin. All of them.
Oh, yeah.
Every governor on every side of every fight, you know?
Yeah, it's not, and it won't, it's like you can't get your foot in the door to even start talking about that, or you get deplatformed. I don't even know this time what the excuse is because I've been given so many different reasons, but the people that were celebrating me getting kicked off had also done the same thing when they had me thrown off PayPal. I was thrown off PayPal twice. I was able to call them and reason with them and get back on. I think it was back in 2014, the first time I was starting off. But this time, it's just, there is no one, they are completely unreachable at this point. I'm like, what am I even being accused of? I'm like, oh, you're breaking these rules. I'm like, which rule am I supposed to have broken and what did I do? It doesn't matter. There is no recourse that you can do. And so I switched, you know, I had Patreon. I always have redundancy. Well, I get kicked off that. Then I go to Subscribestar. Well, that's not available in Japan. So all I have left is a membership on my website until they get rid of that too, I suppose. And it's really bad timing. I got another baby on the way and I'm just trying to fight against all these evil things. And,
well, listen, tell us about the website that you do have and whatever merch you got for sale and anything people need to know to help you get through this. Cause I think they'll probably, you know, you'll end up working it out here before too long, probably.
I think, like, no one believed them. Like, what, all my patrons have been watching me for years, and like, he doesn't do any of that, and so, or reading. And so,
you know what you could do too is just call them racist. Go, look, man, I'm an American Indian, and if you want me to play that card, I'm gonna slam the hell out of you with it. You know,
I was like the second most prominent American Indian on Patreon, probably definitely in the top 10. I hate playing the race card, but I'll do it for my family because I got to do something. But
that's crazy, dude. You know,
I'm usually allowed to talk about things because of that card. You know, like, oh, I
and
feel
look,
like if
you
I
know
was
the entire concept of this, you know, Thomas Jefferson said, speaking of people being canceled, Jefferson said that error of opinion is fine. And is perfectly tolerable as long as reason is left free to combat it. That's it. So
even if you were
what they say you are, well, not the child porn stuff, but what they accuse you of being a racist or racialist or whatever kind of thing, all of that is discussable. And anybody who is not a dumbass can beat a racialist in an argument in front of everyone. And then we all grow and move on from there.
The problem is there's a lot of dumbasses is the problem. Because there are a lot of people who can't be a racialist in an argument because I think it was Pinkerton that said this, a scientist. He was saying because these like very taboo ideas aren't allowed to be discussed, when someone gets confronted with them, like, let's say the most militant flat earther, you know, he's got all his facts, whatever. They get a little overwhelmed and they don't know what the antidote is because they've never been allowed to have a discussion. So when someone comes at somebody and is like, oh, blacks are 13% of the country and 55% of violent crime, blah, blah, they don't know what to say to that because they've never been allowed to have that discussion. But if you had free discussion, all that would have been stomped out a long time ago. There are lots of explanations for that are not biological for why this statistic or that. But you're not allowed to have these discussions. And when I try to, I get people mad at me. I'm like, well, go listen to it because I own them. You know, the fact that they're toppling statues of Thomas Jefferson because slavery, when he ended the transatlantic slave trade, and he almost ended all slavery west of the Appalachian, but that failed by one vote in Congress. So Jefferson almost had ended that back then, but and tried to. And
he was a hypocrite enough, but it was his ideology that banished at least legal slavery from the face of the earth. You know,
well,
that was the whole thing.
He did end the transatlantic slave trade successfully, but he almost ended it for the other half of the United States, and not just west of the Mississippi, but west of the Appalachians. But
although, you know, I've read a letter by Madison saying this is great. Now that we've banned it, the value of my slaves is going to go way up. It was just like a protection racket, you know, kind of thing. Anyway,
either way, Jefferson wasn't Madison, though.
Yes, no, that's right. He wasn't.
And his uncle had lost three children and three wives to childbirth. They had acromegaly in their family. Jefferson's father had that, Peter Jefferson. He was an actual giant. And so he had sex with a black woman who had already had three children successfully. And so Jefferson's cousins were mulatto, and kind of like Ben Franklin, he started out racist, but the more exposure he had and like teaching slaves to read and things, he reasoned his way out of it and said, hey, they're just like us if you educate and da da da. So early Jefferson, you can find quotes and stuff of him having these opinions, but those changed as he got older and had more interactions. He wasn't even with his slaves most of the time. He was in Williamsburg and they were in Monticello. He was trying to pay off the debts for all his sister's marriages and things. He had lots of problems. But even if he was like a hardcore whipping slave master, whatever, it's a prominent figure. Are you going to get rid of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights because it was written by slave owners? Like, people can have a bad opinion about something and good opinions about other things. And history is history. Nobody's going to meet the purity test.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't matter who. Einstein had sex with his cousins. You know, like, Socrates liked little boys. But you cannot negate everything else. Martin Luther King didn't like homosexuals. Whatever. I'm not going to. That doesn't matter to me. I was like, okay, they're wrong on that. But look at all the things they're right on.
Yeah. Well, and as far as Jefferson goes, it's the self-evident. So I don't even have to argue with you because I'm just saying so that everybody is born free. Not that the king doesn't have a divine right, just that every single buddy else does too. How do you like that? And that doctrine of natural rights, you know, is the basic theory of equality of humanity in the last 250 years and 300 years that has changed everything from simply us versus them everywhere in the world. You know, he was the one who said, I don't care if my next door neighbor has one God or 10, it neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg. That's brand new, really cool ways of looking at things compared to what you believe different than me, I'll kill you, which was the typical way throughout the history of humanity.
That actually was said by a TikToker and Twitterer, Asian woman from Harvard, said, if you say all lives matter, I'll stab you and you're bleeding out. I'll show you a paper cut and say all cuts matter. And she got she lost a job because of that. Because, you know, when you say you're going to stab people, that is illegal. But now,
although that was just a figure of speech, too. She shouldn't have been canceled because obviously she's making a metaphor about the paper cut versus a stab wound. Right.
Right. I agree. She shouldn't have been canceled because she wasn't really going to stab people.
Yeah, but that's not a threat. A threat is, look, I'll stab you. I'll stab you and then I'll compare that to a paper cut is an analogy.
Yeah, you know? That was an analogy. But she said plenty other things before and after that that were a little bit worse. Yeah. But I still don't think she was really going to stab anybody. But I feel like they're a little sensitive because there are a lot of these like shooters and stuff really did post everything they were about to do on Facebook and so, or wherever, you know, but they don't ban Facebook. They ban BitChute. So it's like, why? Yeah. I understand like, you know, error on the side of caution or whatever, but this girl wasn't, you know,
well, and look, I am totally for shunning. I mean, I think, that, for example, some of the people that you pal around with who shows you've been going on and things like that, to me, are just absolutely beyond the pale. I'd never have anything to do with. Or take, for example, someone who on the spectrum, the political spectrum, would be seemingly more acceptable, but is a total fraud, like Marcy Wheeler, who spent 3 years making so much money pushing this Russiagate fraud. Well, I mean, if you look at Twitter, all the cool leftists treat her like garbage, and when they don't just completely ignore her because she's just an absolute disgrace, and nobody ever says her name, Marcy Wheeler, without talking about what a disgrace she is and how pathetic she is. And so that's good. I'm all about making her an unperson in every way. She deserves to be dehumanized. What an idiot, Marcy Wheeler.
Like
my
when,
God.
When,
but she shouldn't be kicked off of Twitter and kicked off a Blogspot and kicked off her ISP and kicked off of PayPal. She should just, everybody should just shame her so that she feels shame. That's good. And ignore her away is really the best thing to do, I think.
Everyone's got a right to shun whoever they see fit. I'm okay with arguing with them as well.
Yeah, me too.
Know,
or I'm okay with you arguing with them at least.
Yeah, it's like as long as you're good at arguing with them. But if I feel like I've got a proven enough, long enough track record, but like, okay, I ain't this. Now I'm going to go fight with these people. But I was so looking forward to your debate with Crystal. And he's one of the worst people in the world. And because of COVID and all, it didn't happen. And I wouldn't have been able to travel for the same reasons. But that needs to happen.
Yeah. No, and you know what? You're right. And frankly, like in terms of moral equivalence, is he a less worse person than David Duke? Not really.
I think he's probably worse because
and the premise of the whole debate would be we're gentlemen in suits and ties having a reasonable discussion and nothing worse than that. And so,
yeah,
same difference. You know,
as long as it's really clear, like this is to debate and whatever. You know, Michael Ledeen's been on. I've argued with communists, feminists, whatever, and racists. And but if I thought, okay, this person's never gonna listen, then I wouldn't do it. But I'm also kind of talking to their audience, and a lot of them wrote me mails and stuff. Man, I had not heard that explanation before, and I got. What I'm most proud of is like I got a lot of these like teenagers and 20-year-olds that are about to fall into that and ruin their lives to turn around and go pump the brakes on that.
Yeah.
But I feel like there are a lot of kids, basically. I mean, I think teenagers are kids. A lot of white kids especially, they get suckered into that because right now in certain schools, they're just being told you're evil and you're, you know, like as if as if all the bad things that happened in the past were some product of biology. They weren't. Mostly governments doing these things. And they gravitate to these people because they don't know. There's nobody telling them the opposite side. No one's saying, no, you're not evil. Blah, blah, blah. They're not seeing it. And I want to just try and show these people, like, no, there's a lot of things in between, you know, rejecting people being racist to you and becoming a racist yourself.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm hoping to reach some of those people so they don't go down that way. But
yeah,
it's someone has to argue with these people, like Chris, like that debate with you and Crystal, because we all know how that would go. That would all you have to do is like go see this. You know, this is every neocon talking point taken down. The speech you did, I think it was like 9 or 10 years ago about the Iran nuclear bomb propaganda.
Yeah.
I mirrored that and it still has over 100,000 something views. And that's with, you know, over 4 times of me leaving and getting it back again and then having to unlist stuff and all. I can link to that now because all the propaganda never changed. It's like right. I said it yesterday, because it's all the same excuses, always 6 months away. It's that they lie to people about enrichment, like you need over 90% to make a bomb, not 3, and 20 for medical isotopes. That's all in like a little 7-minute speech. So sometimes we hit those home runs, and some of my debates with I won't name certain people, but with, you know, bad guys are just ruin them. Like after that debate, they were done. All their points were destroyed and they're over with. So. But some people you just got to shun, too, because they're just never going to listen, and their followers don't care. So yeah. That, you know, I get that as well. But.
Yeah. No, and that's important, too, that you're not just wasting your time if you're going to go, you know. I hate to see you, though.
I don't think I could debate Dershowitz, you know. Like, yeah.
Well, you know, I think we talked before, though, about, you know, the more you're shunned and deplatformed yourself, the more you end up with essentially no one else to pal around with. No one else is... show, I think you mentioned about
yeah, I mean, that's true too, in a sense. Like I was so desperate at some point, and it's not like I didn't email everyone else first. I went down the list of, you know, all the way to the darker area to try and get help, because I lost my PayPal and and they're like, yeah, because they think they're gonna win that debate or whatever until it happens.
Yeah.
And and some of them, they're not all like bad on everything. They're anti-war, probably only because they don't want refugees in Europe, but, you know, against the war is against the war in my book, you know. But yeah. I'm trying to bring them over, but
yeah, I'll take
yeah
it.
Take it as a win, you know. It's like, okay, whatever, if you'll oppose the war and just maybe be quiet about all this racial crap or whatever, and just me being me, just being an American Indian and going in there, and they realize, like, okay, you guys, you're one of the good ones or whatever. They can make excuses, but sometimes they just come around. So I don't know. It's a difficult thing. I'm like, oh, I'm deplatformed anyway. So the real threat is, well, I don't want to argue with them because I'll get deplatformed.
Well, what about the others too, right? Like, I mean, if you end up essentially like you can only hang around other outlaws, then... you know, you're going to be like the people you're imprisoned with, kind of thing, just like with anything else. And so a lot of these people maybe deplatformed for no reason end up the kind of people who might actually deserve it later, you know?
Well, I also think people getting deplatformed for no reason actually makes them like go, what are you going to say about me? Well, I'll become that or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's what I'm trying to say.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think Phil Draldy got a little bit of that. Like he got kicked out of the American Conservative and then just doubled down out of spite or whatever. Yeah. But I still like all his earlier work and everything. And he shouldn't have been taken off American Conservative. Like nothing I saw anyway.
Well, it was the one big piece did cross the line. And the thing is, the article itself was almost fine, but the headline was horrible. And then at the very end, there was one really bad paragraph at the end there where Jews should to be labeled before they go on TV. They should have to be labeled like bottles of rat poison or something like that.
What?
But I don't know if I would have kicked him out of tack for that, but I would have certainly said, jeez, Phil. But then you're right that after that, it was like, okay, fine. Now it's on.
Right, right. I'm going to UNS or whatever. Yeah, it's some people, like I've been deplatformed. I'm trying to find my way out through ANCReport.com, by the way, if somebody wants to become a subscriber, leave a tip. And we also have Entropy on YouTube. It's kind of like a workaround for super chats. But there are others like Dr. Shu, who I wrote about recently. They're losing their academic positions because they don't automatically go with the conclusions that the woke cult wants. And like scientists, like people, not even political, are losing their jobs. People are losing their jobs because their spouse liked the wrong thing on Facebook. I mean, it's really bad. And there's just a gang on Twitter that just goes around, finds something they don't like, and cancel it. And they go like, let's all gang up on so-and-so next week. And so they're just going after conservatives, libertarian. Like Daniel McAdams was thrown off of Twitter because he called Sean Hannity retarded.
Yep.
And he was not making fun of people with a mental disorder.
He was making fun of Sean Hannity, which is different, although it sort of sounds the same.
Yeah, and but that wasn't really why they got rid of him.
No, of course not.
They didn't like everything he said.
They got rid of him because he's good on Syria. That's why they got rid of him.
Exactly. They got rid of Press TV off of YouTube days before they killed Soleimani. So that preempted that. That wasn't a reaction. That went back to the Bolton Group from May of 2019. So they planned that for many months before they killed him. And Press TV is just Press TV. I mean, yeah, it's Iranian state channel, but it's just news. They removed it off. They removed their British channel. They removed their everything off of YouTube, and that was that.
They're so like, much of this does come from the Russiagate scare, right? That was where they started with the fake news and the racist and the level of panic that, oh my
God. Well, that's when they got Michael Flynn and Brad Hoff, who's he's been on your show from the Levant Report.
Yeah, good friend.
I think is the first person that leaked that DIA,
he wrote it up. Yeah, I think Judicial Watch got it, but he found it and wrote up. Yeah.
Right. And Flynn was the head of the DIA at that time, talking about how Alpha's Principality, Syria, and yada, yada. And so I remember I was speaking in Sydney. I was supposed to speak at West Sydney University, but they canceled me because I couldn't pay for security. I'm like, why do I need security? So I ended up talking at the Palestinian Convention Center instead. And in that talk, I talked about how Flynn was part of the Trump administration. And I was excited about that. It wasn't like days later that, no, he wasn't. It was because of the Russiagate. And the real story behind that was, yeah, he did call the Russians, but he also called everybody else on the Security Council. And why? To get them to change their vote on Israel's settlements. And he was approached by Kushner, who was approached by Netanyahu himself. So that was the Israeli gate, not Russia gate, because the Israelis are the ones that got Flynn to call to try and get the Russians to change their vote.
And of course, the Russians told him no. So far from them giving him marching orders, they were refusing a favor ask from him. So, yeah.
Everybody said no. And it's like projection, because the Democrats are always guilty of whatever they're accusing others of. Like Biden. Remember when they wanted to impeach Trump, it was about these phone calls with Ukraine. And then Joe Biden's on the phone with Yatsenyuk and saying his quid pro quo, saying, all right, I'm glad you got rid of the prosecutor. Here's your $5 billion. Obama would never do it. He was like, all those calls go through Biden. Obama was smart enough to be like, I'm not talking to you on the phone. Yep. I'm not getting into any of that. Let Biden do that.
And we know from the Newland phone call before the coup that Biden was in on it. We'll get the vice president to come in here and glue this thing together. And that kind of deal is right in the EU call, the famous call.
And I know he lost a child, and Biden's had a rough life. And so he really was setting up his remaining son. It doesn't matter. It's still nepotism, and, you know, that's impeachable. And the media doesn't seem interested in it at all.
Yeah, well, and his son blew all the money on crack and whores. I mean, you can't even make this stuff up. He's cheating with his dead brother's widow, and then he's cheating on her, too, with crack whores.
Well,
with all the money that
he
got, $1 million a year paid by the government of Ukraine to the son of the vice president, the sitting vice president.
Mm-hmm. $80,000 a month, no show job. The epitome of kleptocracy and nepotism. And it doesn't seem to matter. It didn't matter when they made slavery great again in Libya. I mean, you could sell a person for $400 in Northern Africa, like slavery now, not back in Civil War times, but right, in 2011, you could buy and sell people because of the State Department's toppling of Gaddafi for pre-crimes.
Yep.
And there are 9.2 million slaves in Africa today when you include the forced prostitution and child soldiers and exploited labor. And they're still reeling from the effects of the Biafran War in Nigeria. And then there's still the civil wars in Ethiopia and Eritrea. I mean, they lost millions of people from 2006 to now due to simple things and starvation and disease. And it doesn't seem like Black Lives Matter to Black Lives Matter, because it's really just a Marxist organization. I mean, there are still slaves, human trafficking, child soldiers,
I mean, a major part of that is just like all Americans is they don't know anything about it at all. I mean, all the stuff on the Congo, I think I've probably done 2 or 3 interviews on the Congo, maybe not even that. In fact, off the top of my head, I can only think of one good interview I did with a guy from The Nation magazine about the war in the Congo this whole time, because it's not explicitly an American war, although you probably know a lot more about it than I do and America's role in it than me. I think I do remember him explaining that America was involved in it in numerous ways, in fact. But that's one that is totally obscure to people, too.
I was very lucky.
Go ahead.
Because Chinua Achebe, who wrote Things Fall Apart, he's a Igbo Nigerian. His daughter, Nwando Achebe, was my African history teacher in college. So I would meet with her after class and stuff, because I was very interested in it. And became a drum master and all that. And I have got, if you want to do a show on the Biafran War or any of that, I'll come back and give you an earful, because it's something people need to know. And I think they would get interested, especially when you can tie it into how it's affecting their wallet today, and not just the morality of it, but the kleptocracies in Africa kind of get away with it by blaming everything on colonialism. And it's sort of like Democratic mayors in the U.S. blaming everything on racism rather than their own policies. It's not an either or thing. Colonialism was absolutely detrimental and is still reeling from the effects. But a lot of it is also domestic despotism, too.
Sure.
And it's like you can't get to that portion of it because, I don't know, racism or something. So,
yeah. Well, it's liberty that works. We already know that.
Markets are the way out. That's what Botswana proved. You know, if you contrast Zimbabwe and Botswana, where you have Marxists on one side, where you end up with a $1 trillion bill, and Botswana became the fastest growing economy, not only in Africa, but the entire world. And so those are the policies people ought to be looking at.
$100 trillion
What do they do?
$100 trillion bill. I have one right here.
$100 trillion bill. But their next door neighbors who didn't, they had like 12 miles worth of paved roads, and that's it. I mean, it was, and it's a landlocked, it's got all the classic disadvantages, right? And yet has grown to a modern state. And it's just as African and just as Black and just as, you know, whatever is all everyone around them.
Yeah.
But
hey, wait. So I want to get back to what you say about the Black Lives Matter being a Marxist organization, which I'm sure is somewhat true. But, you know, leftist means a lot of things to a lot of people, and many of them don't know anything about economics at all. And
sure.
And frankly, like as a libertarian and as an Austinite, I always have understood why a left winger would choose to be a left winger if that's what a right winger is, and vice versa too. I absolutely understand why a right winger would go, look, man, I must be a right winger because I sure as hell ain't one of them. And so, you know, by default, if someone is a communist, I actually don't mind, as sort of like we were talking about earlier, as long as they'll listen and we can still talk about things, then it's cool.
I mean, Thomas,
and I've known a lot of young leftists in this town who are very good people, and you know, certainly have people's best interests at heart and that kind of thing. So I'm sure that there is a lot of Marxism to it. But then, as you said, you've been sticking up for victims of police abuse who, primarily Blacks, because that's how it is.
Mostly,
for many years anyway. So
you know, Derek Chauvin shot a Native American before he killed George Floyd.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No one cared.
Well, probably wasn't
on
video.
It wasn't on film is my reason. Yeah. I don't think it's because people hate Indians. I think it's because it wasn't on film. And George Floyd was on film. That's the.
I mean, and even a lot of them that are on film, it doesn't come out until later. This was the kind of thing that was on Twitter immediately because it was bystanders who filmed it rather than, you know, the body cams or something. But if anybody subscribes to the Free Thought Project and looks at the Free Thought Project every day, I mean, every single day they kill people. Every single day. It's just, in fact, today, just yesterday, there's a story about a white guy in, I think, Fort Worth or Dallas, who was having some kind of nervous breakdown and called the cops on himself. Please help me. I guess I need a ride home or some kind of thing. And then once the cops got there, he started panicking and was like, please just let me go. And so they tackled him and held him down. And just like with George Floyd, it wasn't really the knee and the neck. It's the pressure on the back as he's laying prone. And they just suffocated him to death. And just yesterday, the judge ruled that, well, there's not another case that already says you're not allowed to suffocate somebody to death. Another clearly established case. So therefore, we won't clearly establish a new case now. Case dismissed. That's it. They cannot be held accountable. And
a lot of our police force are trained by the Israelis. In Minnesota, there's no police academy, which is insane. Yet they got trained by foreign nationals who are, you know, world renowned for what they do to Palestinians as well as African migrants in Israel that live in internment camps.
Mm-hmm. All right, but no, but so talk to me though force. About and there's
the, so about the Marxists, yeah. The
yeah, yeah. Black I mean, there's a lot started. That they get right and that they get wrong, and so that's what I want to hear you talk about.
Yeah, it's that's why we shouldn't sloganeer. I agree. It's Black Lives Matter was at first to fight against police abuse. If you go back to like Ferguson. That's how it was marketed, and that's what people believed, and that was a good, a legitimate cause. And there are some that support Black Lives Matter who think that, well, I'm against police abuse, and I think there's a disproportionate number of blacks being killed, shot, whatever, and so they support Black Lives Matter. That's some of it. But I'm talking about the leadership of it, and on according to their own like official websites, etc., is very just Marxist, Antifa kind of rhetoric. Where it doesn't even barely mention police abuse so much. It's talking about defunding.
Well, that's not right. I mean, the whole first part of it is about the cops and accountability
it
for
was.
The cops. But then the problem is there's 10 or 20 more parts where they just go on and on and on about they want everything under the sun.
Yeah, they did talk about police abuse, but that isn't the... It's supposed to be, that's what it's about, right? Systemic racism and fighting cops, etc.
They're casting way too far of a net, clearly. I mean,
there's a lot of things in between stopping police abuse and just getting rid of police or defunding the police. And there have been people like Senator Rand Paul and others that tried to get rid of qualitative immunity, get rid of red flag laws, no-knock raids, asset forfeiture. There's a lot of things. I could do a checklist of stuff I'd like to get rid of.
Yep.
But they're like, no, just get rid of the cops. Completely. Defund it.
Which, of course, is never going to happen. And so you're just back at square one again.
Right. That kind of anarchy is like you'd have to change a whole bunch of other things, too, before that would work. And it's unrealistic. And it's off-putting. And so when people see, well, I can't even call the police. Like, I think it's in Los Angeles. They have a Karen law now. I totally understand frivolous calls are bad, but that doesn't mean don't call at all. Right. And so, who are you supposed to call when someone breaks into your house or something?
Well, I think without the cops, the free market would take care of it. It would be fine. But you're right that it certainly sounds crazy to regular people.
I'm talking about what the perception is. I mean, you and I would probably agree that everyone that stood outside their store with an AR-15, they didn't have broken windows and looted goods. Everyone who relied on the government for protection lost everything.
Yeah. I mean, I saw a thing where some skaters stood outside of the skate shop and just told the mob, oh, there ain't nothing in there. It's already been robbed. And they moved on to the next one.
We already got it. Keep going.
Yeah. And they protected the skate shop and while everything else around was completely robbed.
I met Rodney Mullins last year. Pretty cool.
You met Rodney Mullen?
I've met Tony Hawk, too. I met Tony and Bucky at the Orlando Surf Expos back in the day.
That's cool. I skated with Tony Hawk in 1988.
Oh, you got me beat on that.
When I was 12. But I hadn't met him since then, though.
he's awesome, and he's doing skate parks. Well, you know, I mean, the little plug on Tony, I'm trying to get him to build one here in Osaka, so applying for all that. But cool. That's a good role model there. Never got into drugs.
The Japan Air is named the Japan Air because the man learned the Japan Air in Japan and said, I'm going to name this the Japan Air. So he's got love for you, man.
Japan is killing it on the street scene right now. It's a lot of young skaters.
Oh, yeah, absolutely right.
It's big wave here like it was in the 80s in the U.S., so... Vert is out and street skating's back in again. So
yeah, no, and some of the very best street pros in America right now are Japanese kids. Two or three of them.
There's some around here. That's why I was like, we need one, because I got shamed by some of these people. Like, damn, how old are you? They're making up things that, you know, used to be called video tricks. You know, something you do for 3 hours and get it once, but you get it on film, and they were just doing them consistently.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really evolved. Yep. And the board hasn't really changed or anything either. Still plywood, still
the generation in skateboarding is only 5 years, man. You know, they do. Things are crazy advanced.
But totally those kind of things keep people away from drugs and other things, I feel like. Yeah. Oh, these positive recreational activities. We need more of that. And a lot less, I think there'd be a lot less drug use. Like the war on drugs, if and talking about police reform, this all ties together. That is the key thing. Like, we can get rid of the list of things I said before, but the war on drugs is the majority of the Absolutely, root of a lot yeah, of different conflicts of all, yeah. comes from that. Yeah. yeah. And I would also say fatherless homes and all these things, but yeah, it's drugs, man. I think that it really breaks families. It wrecks things more than anything else. And we've seen other states come up with different solutions, but
yeah. Well, you know what? Speaking of all of this and tying it back together, what about Skate Palestine? Have you heard about that?
I don't know. And I just heard, I haven't looked at it. You can inform me on that.
Yeah. So it's skatepal.co.uk, and it's a charity to essentially, raise money for skateboards for kids on the West Bank. You can't get anything into Gaza at all. That's if that's one indication of what a prison Gaza is, you can't even send in skateboards to little kids there. But at least you can get them into the West Bank. And they built skate parks. And there's now, you know, Thrasher Magazine actually just did a really good article about this and a video that they put on their website of them skating in the West Bank, I guess in Hebron and Ramallah or something. And they got a great little skate scene. And very importantly, there are two or three... older teenagers who are really good. And so that's what's really important, because that's what inspires all the little kids, is to be like their skateboard hero, you know. So
I'd love to see it in the Olympics.
It was supposed to be, but it all got canceled for the germ. But it was going to be this year. And in fact, there's an Ethiopian team, and there's kids from all over the world now.
It's really a good equalizer, too, because it's the kind of sport that's pretty cheap and can be done almost anywhere.
Yep.
I love what they did in L.A. where they put all this sand. I don't like this part, but they dumped all this sand into the skate arena there in Venice Beach.
Yeah.
So that just caused more people like skating on benches and things. But they just went in there and dug it out themselves.
I know. Well, so many people sent me that, like, oh my God, look at this atrocity. And I was like, meh. I don't know, man. When the day comes, the skater kids will clean that up in 40 minutes. I mean, because
they did
skaters. Skaters work for, we will drain a pool. We will scrub a ditch. We'll sweep a ditch all day,
Well, that's what got the street scene going, is because of the empty pool scene was canceled. Right. And so they just started skating on whatever. So they're like, all right, let's build a skate park. So they don't.
And the kids did empty it. They did get all that sand out of there in no time at all. I saw a clip of them. They had bucket brigades, like they're putting out a fire. And, and they had it done in no time at all. Older kids making the younger kids work, pay their dues a little bit, and that's fine.
Whatever it is, if you want to skate, they need that. And it was also just more of like, stick it to the man, and it got part of that skate culture too. Like, you don't want us to do that? We're going to go do that.
Right.
So that was a good part of that too. But Skate Palestine, you can Western Union money to... the West Bank. The only way I know to get things to Gaza is through religious charities, and there's no other way.
Yeah,
not really.
And I need to get I know their guy. It's Charles Davis, who is it's Charlie Davis, who is not the same as Charles Davis, the horrible pro Al-Qaeda in Syria propagandist, but a really cool skater guy. And I forget the other guys' names, but there are two or three other guys that help run it. And check out, I'm sure the Thrasher article is online by now, too. Is really good about it. And
did you have a favorite skater?
I'm sorry?
Do you have a favorite skater?
Do I have a favorite skater right now?
When you were growing up?
Oh, like in the Hawk and Hosoi days, I was a Tony Hawk kid. Yeah. I mean, everybody loves Christian Hosoi, but Tony Hawk with the, you know, the technician stuff. That was always my favorite. But then, you know, I'm from Texas, so Jeff Phillips and, you know, Dan Wilkes and Todd Prince and Brian Pennington and John Gibson and did I say John Gibson? Craig Johnson and a lot of Mike Crum, a lot of really great Texas skateboarders. So, I think Mike Crum is still a pro-vert skater.
Hey man, you guys are gonna love No Dev, No Ops, No IT by Hussein Badakhshani. It's a fun and interesting read all about how to run your high-tech company like a good libertarian should. Forget all the junk. Read No Dev, No Ops, No IT by Hussein Badakhshani. Find it in the margin at scotthorton.org.
Hey y'all, here's the thing. Donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show and you can get a QR code commodity disc as my gift to you. It's a 1 ounce silver disc with a QR code on the back. You take a picture of it with your phone and it gives you the instant spot price and lets you know what that silver, that ounce of silver is worth on the market in Federal Reserve notes in real time. It's the future of currency in the past too. CommodityDiscs.com or just go to scotthorton.org/donate.
Hey guys, Scott Horton here for ExpandDesigns.com. Harley Abbott and his crew do an outstanding job designing, building, and maintaining my sites, and they'll do great work for you. You need a new website? Go to ExpandDesigns.com/Scott and save $500.
Yeah, no, check that out about Skate Palestine, man. It's a really cool thing and kind of thing I like to promote. That
yeah, I'll put that on my website. Really good. Sounds, I've heard that before, but didn't something... I have so many distractions right now. I'm like, I can't look at skateboarding right now. I need to like get money.
Nah, believe me, I understand. But it's a cross between two things that are important to me, you know, so I like it. I wrote Thrasher a letter, but they didn't publish it.
I have all these cans here for the Tokyo Olympics, which are supposed to be in 2020. Uh-huh. 2020, this whole year sucked, but there's, you know, supposed to be here next year. So maybe, you know, we don't know if there's a second wave. Depends. I love the meme of the doctor that said, are you, when is coronavirus going to end? He goes, I don't know. I'm not political.
That's funny. That's a
I hope
great
we can
answer.
Get it. I was looking forward to going to that. Yeah, we're going to have it here in Japan. So can't go anywhere right now.
Well, maybe I'll see you then, man.
Hey, if you come out here, come to Osaka and I'll show you the skate parks and temples and everything else. We got I love entertaining
that.
People that come to Japan. It's definitely should be on your bucket list.
Yeah, I want to visit Mike in Tokyo Rogers too. You know, he's invited me there for a long time as well.
Yeah, you should definitely go to Tokyo, even though that's our rival city, whatever. But hit Osaka, Kyoto, Nara, that Kansai region. It's like I think of Tokyo as kind of like Orlando. It's sort of the tourist part of Japan where people go to Roppongi and all that, and Kyoto is a little bit like that too, but Osaka and stuff, that's like the real Japan. I don't know how else to put it, but it's a really underrated, like, unique part of Japan with great things to do, that just because it's right, it's always second place. Like, it's kind of like what New York does in the United States. Like, everyone knows about that, but there are a lot of other great cities that are just not quite number one or whatever. So,
right.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, listen, Osaka. I got tacos waiting on me in the other room and I'm going to go eat them.
Have fun. Enjoy that. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. Great.
You know,
to
I'm not
you back.
The only one getting deplatformed. I'm going to have a list on my site of people who are getting the axe for nothing. And we've got to fight against it. You got to draw the line here.
Yeah.
Cause it's only getting worse.
Yep, I absolutely agree.
They're going after everybody. So,
yep.
ANCReport.com, guys.
You know what it is? It's just like the virus. I'm sitting here hunkered down hoping that it passes me by. Let some other SOB get it. And then maybe the whole thing will blow over before it destroys me. So kind of a parallel there, the cancel culture and the virus. Sorry it's happening to you. But I know that if they took away my Patreon and my PayPal, that I would be completely screwed. I would be driving a cab.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. I was like, well, I lost PayPal. I still got Patreon. I lost Patreon. I go, well, damn. And I had to unlist all my YouTube videos because so many people got canceled on there. I'm like, well, that'll come. I'll be a 5-time champion if I get deleted on there. So it's stressful, man. Like, man, what do I do? Stop talking about Epstein and the war and everything? I can't do that.
So wait, now, which all things are you allowed on at this point? You're on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, or not, or what?
I am perpetually 30-day banned on Facebook. I'm on there now because I'm just not using it. Like, I exist, but I know if I post something, I'll get banned. They ban you for stuff you wrote 10 years ago, you know, and I can't even see what it is. Like, this is whatever. And so I am on – my wife has a Twitter. It's ANC Report on Twitter because I'm not allowed on Twitter. I got ganged up on by Black Lives Matter on Twitter. I'm on YouTube, Ryan Dawson on YouTube, but 99% of my videos are unlisted because I can't risk getting kicked off YouTube. I just started a TikTok. I don't think I'm going to continue with that because I looked at it. It was just all garbage. So I'm like, okay. I have brand new tube. That's kind of like, it's called brandnewtube.com, and it's another YouTube, except you don't get censored. And so I'm backing that up. I have a BitChute as well. The problem with BitChute is they don't do live stream and you can't monetize, but you can still catch me on YouTube if you get it live or you see me within the day, but then I quickly unlist that. But the place where all my stuff is ANC Report. It stands for Anti-Neocon Report.
Right.
That is the hub that leads to everything else. And I go on other people's shows and things, but...
And now if I click donate here, I can use Stripe or something like that to still donate to you?
Yeah, I don't even say what my payment processor is because...
But there is one, I get it. Yeah.
There is something, and you can donate that way, and you can make reoccurring, or you can become a member... So the difference is if you just want to make a one-time donation, just use donate. If you want to like participate and see hidden content and whatnot, you can become a member and that would roll over every month. Either way, I sell films, t-shirts, etc. Everything's on the website.
Right. Got a shop.
Amazon still has my book. I haven't been censored on Amazon yet. Knock on wood. Separation of business estate is still up. I wish more people would read that because a lot of people either blame everything on government or everything on corporations. And I'm like, it's kind of both. And I hope they just read the first chapter of that and they'll be like, oh, yeah, makes sense. The government is definitely the enabler in that relationship. But I wrote a whole book about it, so it's a lot to say. But
I hear you, man. Yeah. Well, yeah, we don't want to start a whole new one now. And I'm sorry, because I have the book and I always wanted to read it and interview you about it, because, of course, you're right, that's the key to everything, is the two together is the enemy. But we got to go
it
now.
It all started with Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln, for all the good things he did, one of the most terrible things he did was the marriage between corporation and state with the railroad and timber, coal, etc. And they continued to pay people in script up until the 1920s. So slavery continued on into the 20th century because when you're paid in script, you can only use it back on the same company store that gave you the script. So yeah. They're just recycling it. And slavery still existed up until the Blair Mountain Rebellion, really. And so that everyone's like Lincoln.
You know, I saw a thing about, I don't know which rebellion you're talking about, but I saw a thing about there were some slaves still held in Louisiana up until the 1960s.
But illegally, at least, you know.
Illegally, the sheriff had decided, well, we just don't go to that part of the county or something like that. It just left them to it, you know.
I mean, they enslaved the Chinese after the Civil War to build railroads. We paid them a dollar or whatever. I'm like, that's still slavery. And there's still sweatshops right now. Offshore slavery is what I call it. both in Brazil, China, et cetera. So this battle isn't over. But what we have is all these people still fighting over issues from the 1850s and 60s and ignoring the ones that are right in front of you.
Yep.
So they want you to waste your energy on all of this stuff, rather than seeing the, the child labor, the sweatshops.
Yeah. And look, I mean, the most obvious thing going on here, too, is when George W. Bush writes an open letter to America about its corrupt, crooked, racist heart, when he's the one who put more tanks and more machine guns in the hands of more cops than any American ever. And did more, making Bill Clinton pale in comparison. And then he wants to say, why are you such a racist to a bunch of people who aren't cops and didn't do anything? It's amazing. And
the two
that to me,
in Charlottesville by police were in a military helicopter and they were up there too long, didn't have enough fuel and crashed. People forgot about that, but there was a helicopter crash and a couple of police died at that Charlottesville event with this stupid tiki torch rally and everything. But they were just,
I had forgotten
showing off
about
their
that.
Gear. Yeah. Remember the helicopter crash that crashed cause it didn't have enough fuel. A friend of mine was there. He was a former Delta something, whatever, in the Army. And he was like, they've been up there a little bit too long. He kept saying that. I wasn't there. This is all word of mouth. But, yeah.
I'm sorry. I can't help but laugh at that.
Yeah, it's kind of a Darwin Award, really. You're up.
And aside from the murder of the girl, which was obviously the worst thing that happened there that day, which was clearly a deliberate choice by the murderer, the actual riot was the cops' fault, and it was clear even that day what had happened, that the cops would not allow the right-wingers to leave the park to the north, which is the open way out. They forced them. You're only allowed to leave the park to the south, which means you have to go through the leftist counter-protesters.
And the downtown mall, which is all a bunch of one-way streets and whatnot. I used to live in Charlottesville. I went to high school there. Yeah. It is not.
And that was a deliberate decision to do that,
Almost all the people on both sides had bust in from somewhere else. Almost nobody there was actually from Charlottesville. And it really had nothing to do with the Robert E. Lee statue. I mean, that's what it was in the beginning. But this just became like a live action LARPing in real life or whatever between communists and racists. And the statue thing just kind of got brushed under the rug. I was telling people Charlottesville might not exist if not for Robert E. Lee, because the Northern terrorists would have burned it down like they did every other city. But now that they put a tarp on them and then they took it down again. But all the statues of anybody now are being defaced, vandalized, toppled. It's really sad. It's our American history, all of these people. And I don't think they really know much about any of these historical figures other than straight white man.
Well, I gotta say, I don't give a damn about any of these statues to any of them, really. But what worries me more is them thinking that there's nothing worth learning from somebody like Thomas Jefferson. I mean, something like that, when they're going that far, when they're tearing down statues of Grant and Lincoln. Now we're talking about a craze that, there's no importance
Columbus
to. But, I saw a thing where I don't remember what it was, but it was an old black guy talking about these all these giant monuments to the Confederates in New Orleans or Baton Rouge or something. And they said, well, so what do these statues mean to you? And he goes, I can't say I really care that much, but basically they say, stay in your place. This country still doesn't belong to you. You're still nobody. And around here, you're not really welcome, or you're only here at the pleasure of somebody else who really owns this town and all this, even though I'm from here my whole life. It's kind of like, those statues should be torn down post-hate. In fact, they were put there not right after the Civil War, but decades later in defiance of the Civil Rights Movement and that kind of thing. So,
well, it was the Civil Rights Movement.
I don't know. I'm on their side in that. I don't give a damn about all that. And I think all of Washington, D.C., if you put all Washington, D.C. in just regular office parks instead of these giant marble buildings and temples and all their statues to themselves, then I don't think anybody would take their authority seriously at all. I don't know why any politician deserves a statue.
Make you feel small. That's what Derek Jensen would say. But I don't mind the like the Vietnam Memorial, for example, I don't look at that as, oh, we killed 2 million Vietnamese people, even though we did. It's more to all the 55,000 Americans that died. And you're not supposed to worship it. You're supposed to see these historical monuments not as like heroes, but as just a piece of history to learn from. Yeah. Whether, you know, whether it's a memorial that or the shrines in Japan or whatever, sometimes they argue, oh, they're full of war criminals. Like, yes, they are. They're also full of many victims of bombings by the Americans and so on. And, you know, it's I'm okay with the statues. Not a that big a deal to me, because you can always just make another one, you know. But they argue, put them in a museum. Well, Antifa broke into the museum and burned things down, too. So that didn't work either. And I'm like, if it's not yours and it's not your property, you can't mess with it.
Yeah.
Like, well, it doesn't matter. It's not.
Well, but
yours,
if it's public property, it's not really property. You know,
this was the Daughters of Confederate Veterans. It was all private property, and they
burned it down.
That's
different.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was like, no matter how you feel about it, it isn't up to you to decide to destroy something. And when that ISIS was doing that in Syria and Palmyra, they were destroying ancient statues. You know, this is world history. And yeah, those people probably also had slaves. But these are ancient historical artifacts, and they just went and blew them up. And I just don't like that at all. Like,
yeah. Yeah, the whole kind of Maoist year zero aspect of the whole thing. And so to me, I can't help but be mostly just bemused by it, because this is still a very big country of 330-something million people, and we're just not going to be ruled by the pretentious coffee house set for too long, you know? That was that was an onion when the Bolsheviks took over the Russia in 1917. It was pretentious coffee house type seize power in Russia.
yeah, your blue haired weebs are
dumb century. Yeah. All right, I gotta go. Thanks
for
doing this. Great to talk to you again, buddy.
Thanks for the time.
Yeah, man.
Sorry, I talked your ear off, but in the future we can talk about Africa, or there was something else you were asking me about, but whatever, I'm down. So.
Okay, cool, man.
We can do a show. Thanks so much.
All right, good talk. Thanks, appreciate it. You guys, that is Ryan Dawson again at Anti-Neocons. That's ancreport.com.
The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.